RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. So, Josh, I got to tell you, this week, a lot of crazy stuff going on. I mean, I don't want to get into it too much, but there's all sorts of things falling apart. I got spoilers coming out about upcoming episodes, and there's movie rumors and stuff that aren't true, and they're leaked rumors, and people are telling me one thing and then doing something else. Man, you know, I just gotta thank you, because, you know, at least you're not lying to me. Oh, all right. Well, okay. So yeah. Why don't you just tell me what episode we're going to be talking about today?
Yeah. Well, let me talk about that. We're actually going to be talking about season 2, episode 17, Birds of Prey. And you know what I discovered last season, season 1,
mm-hmm.
episode 17 also had the Huntress in it.
Really?
That was the third one with the Huntress, where she returned. But
Right. She came back. That's right. It was a two-parter to start with. I was thinking this was her third episode.
This would have been her fourth episode. So
awesome.
She had a two-episode arc, and then she returned in episode 17 last season. And then this episode 17, I guess. So I think next season 3, episode 17, she breaks out of jail.
I was about to say that. Yeah, maybe we should start paying attention to when characters show up or what key things take place. It definitely sounds like some of the things that are happening on this season, though, are kind of mirroring elements of either the first season or the beginning of the second season. So,
yeah, I agree. Cool. And kind of expanding on thoughts I've had, you know?
Right.
So, well, let me tell you a little bit about this one. As I said, episode 17 of season 2, Birds of Prey, was originally aired on March 26th of 2014. It was written by Mark Bimsdorfer and A.C. Bradley. So I hope I said A.C. right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that was correct, yeah.
A.C., okay, well, I said it kind of how it's spelled. But it was directed by John Baring and, be very, very quiet. We're hunting mobsters. That's right. The Huntress is back in town. And she's still playing out the starring role in Daddy Dearest. But thanks to Arrow and his friends, of course, Frank Bertinelli, her father, is now in custody, which means that, of course, Helena can't be far behind. She's gonna come back into town. She's still gunning for him, so... Or crossbowing for him, I guess, depending on how you...
How do you know that? Well, I don't really know that he's coming, but...
Well...
Nice way to cover your butt there.
Oops. Well, anyway, now Oliver, he's going to prepare everyone. He's got a much bigger team now than last time Helena was in town. So he's going to prepare everyone for her return. But Roy, he can't seem to hold it together, so... So Oliver, of course, you know, he sits down and has that, you know, Mr. Brady talk with him and insists that he breaks up with Thea for her safety. So meanwhile, the Huntress and her minions take a room full of hostages, including Laurel. So Oliver and Sarah have to try to get her out of that situation and of course, stop Helena from killing anymore. So... and meanwhile, back on the island, well, I guess not meanwhile, in the past on the island, Oliver, he received a special souvenir for his trip to the island that may or may not say, my girlfriend traded me for someone who could fix the bad guy's boat, and all I got was this lousy shadow tattoo.
I don't think it was lousy. That was admirable work done, you know, in not top-notch conditions. That is not probably the best way to get a tattoo.
Do you think they clean the needle first?
I don't even know that there was a needle, Josh. I think it might have just been a jagged piece of metal.
This guy's fingernail. He just sharpened it really.
I mean, when they were, you know, electrocuting him with the battery jumper cable, I'm like, did you guys even swab that thing? That's filthy. So.
Now, do you think Slade, he asked if any of the prisoners were tattoo artists, or did he just pick a guy and say, you better not mess this up? Or sorry, you better not mess this up.
Well, I decapitated the last tattoo artist accidentally.
They probably went through a couple different ones. That looks nothing like a dragon.
Wow. Yeah, it's, oh man. Not, you know, it's just a horrible way to get a tattoo, I think,
in
the first place.
It is. Now, I have a tattoo. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I don't think I did.
Well, you know, I usually have pants on when I'm around you. So, I don't remember them tying me up when I got that tattoo.
Yeah.
So
I have a little one on my shoulder. It's the Earth from space. So thank you to the three people out there that just laughed that were old fans of Friends. So.
All right. So this was a good episode with lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got a little bit of news here. So these are some things that have been discussed. There have been a couple things going on. People from the show have been both at PaleyFest and at Florida MegaCon. So while at Florida MegaCon, Manu Bennett, the press asked him, you know, about the final fate of his character, Slade Wilson, which, you know, he's not going to say anything about that. And I'm going to say take anything else about this with a grain of salt because, you know, he may not be privy to all of the comings and goings of the characters on the show, but it is said that he did hint that John Barrowman's Malcolm Merlyn would return as the antagonist for season 3, which is really interesting. And I think I'm hoping that Barrowman comes back at least one more time this season, because I think he's been on the show twice this season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think there was the one time that he confronted Moira, right? And then there was...
And the one time she confronted him.
And the one time she confronted him, right, which would have been later. So, okay. So I'm looking forward to that, but that would be really interesting to, you know, kind of bring this guy that supposedly died season 1 back as the antagonist, because it kind of gives Oliver and the audience a whole chance to, you know, try to figure out what's going on, because you know what's coming. So first season, Oliver didn't realize there was a bad guy out there. This season, Oliver knows there's some bad guys out there, but he didn't really know what was going on, and still kind of doesn't. He's still, Brother Blood is still kind of in the shadow, or not in the shadows, but he's not.
He's waiting in the wings.
Right, waiting in the wings, right? He knows that Slade's there, but we've kind of forgotten about Brother Blood, so I think that's going to have to come back, and, you know, the Brother Blood pressure is going to have to increase, so to speak.
It sounds like you need some medication for that. The Brother Blood pressure is going to increase.
Maybe if you just throw some clotting agent on him, that'll just cause him to like seize up or something. I don't know.
So. Well, I don't have any doubt really that Merlyn will return. I'm not sure if he's going to be like the main antagonist for season 3. That would kind of surprise me a little bit, but. You know, I always like which direction they go with most of these storylines, so I'd be okay with it, but I'd be surprised.
I think it would be interesting to see that, or to make it look like he is the main antagonist, and then we even reveal that there's someone else, you know, kind of like with Deathstroke. And, you know, we can't really talk about or predict, I guess, too much of what's going on, because we don't really know where any of that's going. I mean, obviously there's some confrontation coming between Oliver and Slade, but...
You know, Mark Guggenheim tweeted a picture from an old comic the other day of Green Arrow, and he was fighting a gorilla. I'm guessing it was Gorilla Grodd. It didn't really say because it was an older comic. So
I hope
maybe
it was Kong Gorilla.
Kong Gorilla? It could have been.
Yeah.
So maybe that's going to be the main antagonist for season 3.
Well, that'd be cool. You know what? I got to say, if they put Gorilla Grodd on the show, wow, that would really be an interesting direction to go. You know, a non-humanoid villain, because there are several of them out there.
Yeah, that sounds like something they might do more for the Flash.
I was going to say, because Grodd is more of a Flash villain. too. So, and then something else that came out, I believe this was from PaleyFest, but this was from a Mark Guggenheim interview. He said, one of the things we'd love to do at some point is to do an episode where you've got Black Canary, Felicity, and the Huntress all working together. And he says, that's on our show bucket list. And at this point, it seems like they put something on their bucket list and they check it off really quick. I mean, I'm not privy to what their full list is, but, you know, you look at the things they've talked about wanting to do here, and it's like they've seemed to have done everything, I mean, that they wanted to do. Not, you know, I'm sure there's other things where they just want to keep pushing the direction and stuff, but boy, I mean, it's like, oh, can we bring Roy on the show? Sure. Okay, they bring Roy on the show. All right. Now we're going to make him super strong. Okay. All right. So they, you know, go and do that. We want to get Canary on here. Boom. We got Canary on here. It's like, wow. They just...
It's a really shallow bucket.
It's a shallow but wide bucket, I think, because they put something in and it doesn't seem to sit there for a long time because everybody involved in the show really wants to kind of move it along and stuff. So
maybe it's more like a, you know, a milk bottle where some guy comes in and refills the empty ones every week or so. So they've got a new bucket every so often. They've got a lot of good ideas and they seem to be really incorporating them in a realistic way into this show. So
yeah, exactly.
Keep going.
All right. So this week, Birds of Prey. That's the title of the episode. And so primarily, this is the same, you know, the title of this episode shares the name of a comic book series, much as last week's Suicide Squad did. Birds of Prey was a comic series as well as a, was it CW or WB?
I think it was the WB back then.
It probably was the WB. It was a 13-episode series with Canary, with a Huntress, and Harley Quinn was the kind of the main villain for the episodes. There was kind of an Oracle sort of character on it. I'd seen a couple episodes, but it was not something that you want to sit down and just watch. I don't think it probably does not hold up very well, and I just remember it. People talking about it, it was not very good at the time. Probably which
they were,
only went through.
They were very excited about it when it was coming, and then I think it kind of let a lot of people down.
Yeah,
at least that's what I remember. But
and I don't, you know, they kind of did the costumes a little bit more so than they do the costumes here on Arrow. You know, they were a little more closer to the comic books, but it just, I guess there was other problems with it. Anyway, so that's one kind of reference here for the title. I wanted to look up and see just exactly, you know, we often talk about Birds of Prey and stuff like that, just in terms of animals and stuff like that. So I wanted to look up and see what the actual definition of it is. So according to Wikipedia, Birds of Prey, which are also known as raptors, not to be confused with the Jurassic Park kind, they hunt and feed on other animals. And the term raptor is derived from the Latin word rapere, meaning to seize or take by force, which I think we saw a lot of in this episode. Also, interestingly enough, birds of prey, these types of birds, which, you know, include hawks and falcons and, you know, not canaries, but okay. Maybe in this case, I will make an exception. But in most cases, the females are larger than the males. So I found that kind of interesting because, of course, this is a, you know, a female-centered episode. And I think they covered a lot of bases with all of the female characters on here, as well as the male characters. But, I really think that the Huntress and Canary are the two that share the limelight. I mean, I think, you know, effectively, those are the two that we're talking about here, because, you know, they're the ones that have the most to learn/express, get off their chest or anything like that. So,
yeah, I think for sure those two, and that's where they got the title. Although I kind of expected more of the women working together with a title like that. You know, when you take it, because that's, I mean, definitely comes from the comic and the storyline from, mm-hmm. from Birds of Prey, you know. So, but it still worked. A good introduction with all, bringing those people together. I think probably Laurel was probably thrown in there in a different way, but could be considered part of that group, I suppose.
Oh, that's true. I mean, and I think Laurel had a really important part in this episode. And, you know, I believe that I think it all worked really well. You know, we're starting to bring Laurel around. We're this whole season, Laurel, and I don't want to get too sidetracked on her because I want to come back, but she's been meandering, right? She doesn't have a direction. And I think this episode, as well as the Suicide Squad episode, which surprisingly enough, you know, really had very little to do with her, are helping her find her direction. You know, they've kind of, she's been spinning, and now these two episodes have sort of set her off on a course. Exactly what that course is, I think, we still have yet to find out, though we can discuss that a little bit. But I want to talk about everybody's crazy, crazy ex-girlfriend, you know, from the other side of the coast. And really, that's what you got from that? Was she's an ex-girlfriend? Helena Bertinelli. Ladies and gentlemen, wow. Psycho City. She is nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the kind of she's the kind of girl that you change your phone number for after you don't see her for a day or two.
Right. So, as you mentioned, the opening of the opening episode or the opening sequence is they re-kidnap or they not the kidnap but they re capture Frank Bertinelli, which is that's they weren't even going after him. It didn't seem like.
No, he was with somebody else, helping someone else.
I believe it was Bruno Mannheim or something like, or Hugo,
yes.
Hugo Mannheim.
Hugo, oh yeah, Hugo Mannheim. That was what his name in the show was, yes.
Yeah, racketeering, extortion, murder, the Goomba trifecta, as as Lance puts it. So I'm like, wow.
That's a great line.
I'm sure, I don't know, is that, can we say that? Is that okay? Is that PC?
I think so. Okay. Well, we're just repeating what... you know, a disgruntled cop was talking about. It's okay.
Okay. But, you know, wow. It's like he's still in Starling City, yet Helena's been searching everywhere, including Italy, I guess, because they have put up a map.
Wait, no. You're assuming he's still in Starling City. I kind of got that he had been somewhere else, but now
he
he's
came
back. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess they didn't express that enough for me, like, right off the bat. I mean, they hit me with a bunch of other things is that, you know, uh-oh, now he's stopped, I guess. You know, it's like he's like a fish. He stopped swimming. Uh-oh, here comes the shark. Here comes Helena, and she is, you know, going to, you know, take him down and let no one stand in her way except for all these people that keep standing in her way. She just, you know, she keeps missing him. Like, she's a really good killer based on all the information. Yet she's missed, I don't know, I think there's like three opportunities kind of in the episode where she should have just taken her dad out. I mean, and I know the whole point is that she says she wants to kill her dad, but I don't think she really wants to kill her dad. I mean, there's part of her that she's still his little girl. He's the little girl that he took ice skating and for ice cream and whatever else it was he was talking about. What do you...
Helping with math homework.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, which just speaking from my point of view, is really never a pleasant experience. So I'm not sure that was a good example. I think my kids would probably shoot me right there. Remember when I helped you with your math homework? Okay, I'm sorry. I'll just try to help.
What are we supposed to take from this? I mean, do you think she really was that intent on killing her dad, or she's just working through some issues?
Working through issues. Whew. That's another thing I hope never happens with my kids. I kind of think she was. I kind of think her intention was to kill him, but I think it. Every time she got the opportunity, it was harder than she expected it to be.
Okay.
I mean, I think she really wanted him dead. I mean, and again, just like him coming back, I'm kind of speculating on what her feelings would be. But, you know, going all over the world looking for him and, you know, wearing a lot of black leather coats and things like that, trying to find him, I think probably she had really, really built it up in her mind that she was going to go through with it. But that's just kind of based on her actions. So I think so, but I think it was harder. And again, and this is kind of like with Ivo, you know, a couple episodes back when he was talking to, gosh, was it Slade or Oliver or maybe even both? You know, and Sarah Warren,
talking to
like,
Oliver, yeah.
She's like, don't let him talk to you. He'll get in your head. You know, it's like it's that monologuing. You know, you can't let him talk to you. As soon as you let him talk to you, they're gonna get to you. So, but I think she had intentions to do it.
Okay, and then she, you know, she's still about to do it, and there's gunfire from this crazy SWAT captain. You know, if you're wearing a mask, you're in a body bag or whatever it's he was saying. He's he was a little hot-headed and not using his best judgment in terms of, like, as an officer. I mean,
they give him every Halloween off, by the way, so they don't want him out there.
That would be horrible.
It almost seems like he has a grudge. Maybe something, and they didn't explain this, of course. They didn't explain much of him at all, actually. I would have
he was just
a
jerk.
Backstory, but yeah. Maybe something happened because of, you know, Arrow or maybe Merlin or something, or maybe during the quake, or but he's definitely got some background.
Right. So it looks like when he was shooting at the Huntress and Arrow and Canary, he hit Helena's dad and killed him. And at that point, you know, it to me it seemed like Helena was, you know, it didn't seem like she was relieved. It was like, you know, she was really upset that her dad was dead, but she was also like really slipping off the edge because it was supposed to be her that did it. It's like now her mind at that point, I thought they were just going to have her completely snap, you know, pull like a Count Vertigo and kind of just totally disassociate because she's built up this thing where it's like, I've got to be the one that kills him. Nobody else can kill him. Only I can kill him. And then he dies in some other fashion. So the end justifies, you know, or the end has come to the point where she wants it to come to, but it wasn't through the motives and the way that she wanted it to happen. And I thought they were just going to completely have her go bonkers. And she kind of did. I mean, she was breaking down over that.
Well, that's another reason why I did think that she intended to go through with it, just because of her reaction at the end there.
Okay, when she found out that he was dead?
Yeah.
Now,
it's supposed to be me, you know, it's at that. But
right. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I just felt that, you know, she was like saying that. It's like one of those things where, you know, I need to take care of this. It's very important that I do this. You know, whatever it is, it's like, you know, someone says, no, that's fine. I'll go to the store and pick that up. It's like, no, it's very important that I do this. And it's kind of, you know, like the lady doth protest too much. You know, just going through all these motions. I don't know. Maybe if I watch the episode again, I'll feel that she really would have gone through with it because I think the scene where I felt that she was really about to do it was in the courthouse. And then, of course, Oliver interrupted. But, you know, they were doing the trade-off at the end, and I felt that she had the upper hand and, you know, could have just taken care of it. And then, again, they were kind of interrupted by this cop. But, I don't know, by that point I felt she had slipped a little bit and was not, you know, completely up to the task.
Kind of losing her nerve.
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, there was so many other things going on.
I can see where you can get that, and especially after having to deal with Sarah and Oliver from, you know, from the time she showed up and up until that point.
Well, and even Laurel.
Because
there was that scene where, you know, Laurel, the Huntress, or Helena at that point, which is, while I'm thinking about this, Huntress, right, with the mask, pull the mask off. Cut to another shot, and all the makeup's gone too. You know, it's very convenient how when they take their masks off, the eye makeup comes off with it as well. But anyway, Laurel has that great scene. You know, Huntress is being, Helena is being just totally sarcastic. And it's like, oh, did Tommy dump you? And she's like, no. You know, she's working through her AA steps, right? She's like, no, he died. And you can feel just like, ugh, that just seems to really hit her. It's like, oh, I didn't even mean to take it there. And then she sees how vulnerable Laurel is. But, you know, Laurel's owning up to her emotions and her feelings and everything like that. And I think that, for me, that is where that turn comes in, where I feel like, okay, after that point, Helena is like second guessing everything that's going on, because, you know, she sees, well, I mean, death is this real thing that comes into play here, and am I going to be like Laurel, you know? So I don't know, there was some things that were going through my head about that. I thought that was I thought that was a really well played scene, and just opened up some other questions for me there with the motivations.
And again, kind of calling back to last year when we were talking about Helena, I don't know if you remember, but the first couple episodes with the Huntress were not my favorite ones. I didn't care for the way that she played that character, and I think by the third one, I was liking it a little bit more. I did like what was going on here. I thought it was pretty well played, and so I just wanted to kind of put that out there that, you know, she's growing on me a little bit.
Well, I thought Jessica DeGaux did a pretty good job in this episode. Like I said, if you know, she was trying to play off bat stuff crazy, you know, she really nailed it there, because I felt this character was really unhinged. I mean, the lengths that she went to, you know, sending in a fake car with another driver, having a whole plan where she would dress up a poor hostage.
That one made me mad.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what if they shot that poor lady? Oh my gosh. That one made me mad. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they didn't go that far.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, the frat guys, you know, getting to drive her, I wasn't so... that wasn't so bad. That didn't bother me as much.
Yeah, that one was fine. It's like, you know, because they got boobs or whatever, right? That was the... Hey, I was a frat guy.
I rest my case.
There you go. So, talk just for a second, Josh. Tell me about what your thoughts were with the kind of the coda with Helena, where Oliver goes in to visit her, and she's chained up, and they have... You know, what I thought was... For me, it felt like a really emotional scene. But how did that end the episode? Like, what were your thoughts about that sequence?
Well, I think it was important for future stories. I guess I'll just kind of start with that.
That is, they needed that to be able to open up that
right
box,
and so showing that
stories.
Oliver still cares. Which I think is kind of an important aspect of his character. Just that, you know, once he has these emotional ties to people, I think, you know, he doesn't ever really let them go. And I think that's probably even going to be true with Slade, either next week or whenever he ends up finally confronting him. I thought it was well played. I thought she really showed... you know, I don't know a whole lot about the Huntress character in the comics, and a little bit, you know, here and there. But, you know, she was a hero, vigilante hero, you know, similar to Batman, but a little bit more, I don't know, would you say more ruthless or more... maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, it's so hard to disassociate her from Batman. I mean, because the original Huntress is Batman's daughter from... Earth 2, I guess. So,
yeah.
I mean, the Huntress that we are watching in the show is based on a Huntress 2, the Huntress 2 character, which is Helena Bertinelli, you know, this mob boss's daughter and stuff like that. So, you know, you've got that, you know, it's she's taken the mob sensibilities from her dad, but she's using him for good.
Yeah.
What's right, what's wrong, you know, it's still really gray.
Right. And so I think which what this whole episode was about, I think. But I think that by the end, you know, once her father was dead, she's starting to come to the realization that, oh, you know, I guess this wasn't such a good idea, and you know. And so now maybe she can spend some time in jail thinking about, well, I got all these skills and stuff, maybe I can do something else with them. But it seems like it kind of set all that up, that end scene. I didn't care for the way it was played out. It was a little bit too, I don't know, just convenient, I guess.
Yep.
number one, I hated Oliver's story. You know, how did you get in here? Oh, you know, we make a generous contribution to the policeman's ball or whatever. Even I don't even think he meant it. He was serious about it, but it kind of sounded like it was supposed to be.
I don't know. That seemed a little, you know, it's like, really? Okay.
And he was maybe a little too forgiving for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Oliver just doesn't seem like that forgiving. He's certainly not forgiving his mother.
No, I know. That's the thing, right? That's what we're seeing this episode, is that he wants to forgive people, but there's some people just, nope, I can't forgive these people.
Right, right. And I think he struggled with those kinds of decisions. You know, it's like he doesn't want her to be killed. He doesn't want Frank Brunelli to be killed, but yet, you know, he wants Slade killed and
right.
He used to kill people. So that's okay. That seems consistent with this hero struggle that he's been going through for both seasons. So, not my favorite scene, but it set up some stuff which will play out in the future, I'm sure, and I was okay with it.
I think you hit on a couple of important things here. One being that that final scene seemed convenient. To me, it seemed like they were trying to wrap up the Huntress storyline, so if they were never to come back to the Huntress again, basically Oliver's come in and he's administered last rites or whatever, you know, he's blessed her. He's like, you know what, I understand and, you know, I forgive you, kind of thing. So that, you know, he puts a check in the good column. But I felt
that's a good way to describe it, that administering last rites kind of thing. It did kind of feel like that.
Right, because the Helena that we've seen up to this point, the one hell-bent on revenge, she's done. And what is it we've learned from all sorts of, you know, television and comic book stories and things about revenge, you know, other than it being a dish best served cold, is that, you know, the revenge, it just eats you inside, right? There's nothing to it. Like, okay, so now you've taken care of it. You've gotten your revenge. Well, now what? I mean, you're just empty inside. So
you got to pass on the Dread Pirate Roberts hood to someone else.
Yeah. So, you know, she is kind of this new vessel waiting to be filled up. But I guess from a show perspective, from a writing perspective and everything like that, I felt it was a little too pat. And it's just that this would have been a scene better served 3 months down the line, you know, beginning of next season, to have this scene, because, you know, he just seemed to be able to forgive too quickly. And like you were saying, he's not necessarily in a forgiving mood for other people. I mean, even in episodes where, like, Felicity pisses him off or Diggle pisses him off, he doesn't forgive him right away.
No.
So this, it just, again, it seems like they were trying to wrap up the Huntress storyline, so should they never come back to it. That,
well, maybe if Felicity and Diggle would sleep with him, he'll forgive him a little quicker. Maybe that's the key there.
But I don't know. Crazy ex-girlfriend coming back to town. It's like, you know, I don't know if he'd be wanting to sleep with her right now or anything like that. So I'm sure we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the Huntress, too, as she interacts with some of these other characters. But I want to talk about Sarah/Canary here a little bit. And the one thing that I have to keep reminding myself about some of these characters, because I'm like, wow, look, the motivations for these characters are kind of across the, you know, all over the place. She's talking about, you know, she'll do whatever it is necessary to do, you know, when, you know, Helena's coming back and, you know, Oliver's like, you know, don't kill her. And she's like, you know, I'm going to do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that had that great exchange with Felicity, where she's like, you know, I've totally kicked the Huntress's ass. And Diggle's just nodding, you know, like, yep,
yeah,
yep.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But the thing that, what I was going to say is that I have to remember is that we're looking at Sarah on the island, who is learning that she has this strength in her to be able to do what it takes to get stuff done. And now in the present day, she's been living with that for 5 years, right? She has built this strength up to just, there's a job, I got to do it, here's what I got to do. I have to push past, you know, whatever barriers or moral or ethic dilemmas that she might have just to get something done. And she's become this stone-cold killer. And now she's having to, you know, with Oliver's help, she's entering that new age where she, too, has to, you know, learn to, you know, get past the needing revenge or, you know, needing to kill somebody to become a better person and, you know, just have some more humanity, right, to come back, as they talk about on the show, you know, come back from the dark side, basically, or, you know, stop letting the darkness in, even though it's tainted the characters to a degree. They have to, you know, refocus on the light, I guess.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've seen this theme kind of running out throughout the series, but with the hero and, you know, what makes a hero and what do you have to do. And I think that's kind of a common theme in a lot of superhero mm-hmm. realism, dark storylines you see these days. But what I don't know that her philosophy is all that bad. I'll do what I need to do. I'll do what's necessary. That doesn't necessarily mean killing.
Right.
But I think we were to assume that that's what she meant.
Right. For her, she takes it, you know, to that. Well, I mean, she was in a group called the League of Assassins, for gosh sakes. I mean, you know, that was her job, was to terminate people with extreme prejudice, I would assume here. And it's become kind of her mantra, you know, that you got to take, you know, if you're going to take someone down, and I'm sure this is like you know, it would seem like this would probably be a lesson that you would learn from the League. If you're going to take someone down, make sure they stay down, because otherwise they're going to get up and they're going to put, you know, a knife or a bullet or whatever in your back. And, you know, she is in that same place that Oliver was, you know, Sarah now is in the same place that Oliver was in season one, where he was just hell-bent on going out there and, you know, doing what it took and, you know, putting people down and, you know, killing if at all necessary. And yeah. Really, it seems like Sarah doesn't need that much provocation to kill. It's like, oh, someone's coming back? Are they going to mess with Oliver? It's like, all right, well, I can, you know, I have the tools. You know, it's like, I can kill somebody, and I know I can kill somebody, so what's to stop me from killing somebody? It's like, if you're in a fight and you have a gun in your hand, well, what's going to stop you from using the gun, right? Like, it's that escalation of violence and force mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
She seems to be learning the lesson a little faster than Oliver, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, because she's a woman, you know, she's you know, just more enlightened and
now,
not as stupid.
Did you think at the end when she's got, you know, she's got Helena in a headlock there, did you think she was going to kill her? Because I kind of felt like, oh, okay, she's not going to kill her. She's just going to kind of, you know, put the chokehold on her until she passes out, and then that's good. I mean, because if she wanted to kill her, she could have just, you know, stabbed her or something
right.
with her. I don't know. But
so they're in that move, right? So I'm thinking, okay, chokehold. But then Laurel comes out and starts talking to Canary, saying, you know, this is not who you are, which is that really, you know, interesting kind of Shakespearean. It happens in Shakespeare's comedies where two characters, they can't talk to each other, but then someone puts on a disguise in some fashion, you know, for a party or whatever.
Right.
And then these two characters can talk to each other, but of course they don't know they're talking to each other. So they're talking about each other, but to each other. And that's what I felt Laurel and Sarah were doing, because, you know, Laurel and Sarah, they couldn't communicate. Then Sarah shows up with the mask on and Laurel's like spilling her guts and,
yeah.
you know, all this stuff. So when Laurel comes out
and Sarah too.
Well, yeah. And you know, and they're talking about each other's sister, you know, to themselves. I mean, it was the one scene in the law offices where they're hiding behind the desk. I mean, that was heavy duty stuff with the two of them. And I thought that was some really good character development on both characters' parts. And like I said, that's where I think, you know, where Sarah is helping Laurel be strong, you know, to do what it takes to get through and not let the darkness back in. So, you know, of course, Laurel comes out to do the same thing for Sarah at that point. You know, she says, this is not who you are. And she's like, Sarah says, you know, something, you know, along the lines of, you know, yeah, it is. I mean, and then at that point, that's when I thought, yeah, she is going to kill her. I thought she, you know, might just have her in a chokehold to start with. But then Laurel says, you know, show me. She's something like, show me that that's not you, or, you know, show me who you are, or something along those lines. And I'm like, holy crap, is this going to be, like, I'm waiting for her to still have Helena in a chokehold. I thought she was going to reach up and pull her mask off.
Pull off the mask. I did, too. That's the exact same thing. And the makeup.
Right. Oh, well, the makeup's gone from the eyes. And I was going to be like, that would be a super powerful scene, because then there's your sister, you know, trying to kill this person. Then you have to talk her out of killing the person at that point. But I see they went a slightly different way. They got the same, I think, emotional punch out of it. But it could have gone a little bit different there, and it would have been interesting to see.
Yeah, it was good. And I like that idea of them talking to each other. I didn't put that together like those old Shakespeare comedies. That was good. That was good. It was a good way to do it for both both sisters to work out some things with each other, even though they don't really know they're doing it with each other. Sarah does, I guess, but not Laurel.
Right. Well, and I mean, that happens with Oliver too, where he's had conversations with the characters who didn't know who he was. With Laurel, I guess, in a couple season one episodes, probably, you know, where he's had to work stuff out with her, you know, even, you know, he's got that quote inside information because, you know, he's Oliver and he knows what's going on with Laurel and stuff.
So I might have to test this this method. Maybe just get a mask, and if anytime I have a problem, you know, if I'm angry with my wife or something, it's a little marriage counseling, right? I'll just put on my voice modulator.
Uh-huh.
And you think that would work?
The Bald Avenger.
Hey, speaking of voice modulator.
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
Where is her voice modulator? Well,
I think it's right between her cleavage.
Oh, okay. All right. You know what I was thinking is that would be a really good opportunity for them to put the choker on Canary. Oh,
that would have been awesome. Yes.
It matches the outfit completely, and it actually would modulate her voice.
Yeah.
But
good point.
Anyway, that was just a little side note, but not that I'm complaining. I had plenty to look at in that area. I didn't need it.
And then I want to talk a little bit about Laurel too, because I thought she did a great job of standing up for herself, and especially they've put her character through a number of crazy emotional, you know, roller coaster rides here in this episode alone. You know, she starts off at AA and she's like, you know, I'm doing totally cool when I'm here, but you know, outside of here, it's very difficult. And she has this,
and in a perfect sense of great timing, she gets a call.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The assistant district attorney, right as she says that,
hey, would you like your job back? And I'm like, really? Okay, so I was like, really? What's going on? And he's just swept everything under the rug. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see, because she has some experience. I'm like, this is not, something's not right here. I couldn't quite put my finger on it at the beginning. And then, of course, you know, Adam Donner. I mean, it's like, people say Laurel threw her career away, you know, originally. But, dude, Donner, man, poof, right out of there. He was.
Did he really think that was going to work?
Oh, my. It's like, you bring him in through the front door and let her come. I mean, in the best situation, it's what you got. People, you know, a bunch of people died. Worst situation would be everybody died, I guess. And you lose your job, too. But Laurel had a lot to cope with. And, you know, first thing, I mean, I thought it was, like I said, a really cool scene in the law offices there, where she's going for a drink and Sarah, you know, calls her back, but she, you know, she can't reveal that she's Sarah, but she did see the chip on the keychain. So she had that to go by, which I thought was foreshadowed, you know, pretty strongly when she was trying to open the door. You know, it's like, oh yeah, obviously we're supposed to know, you know, she's been, whatever it was, 20 or 30 days sober, I guess.
Yeah.
Point, so.
Do they do that? They give you a keychain? I don't know.
I know they get the chip and stuff. I guess they can put it on their keychain like that, which is cool, because, you know, every time you get your keys out, it helps remind you that, you know, what you're working for and stuff.
That's cool.
You know, she has this kind of breakdown, and she talks about how she is just expendable decoration, which I thought was an interesting turn of phrase, because not only is the character feeling that, I think we've talked about this on the show, not to this degree, but I mean, that's kind of what the actress is in terms of the role. Like, what has Laurel done this season? Nothing. I mean, she's just kind of been...
She sank to the bottom.
Right.
Which she even mentioned in this show.
Right. But right now, if they were to, like, get rid of her, it's like, eh, you know, is not that they necessarily would, but, you know, we thought, like, first season, okay, they're going to build this character up and make her strong and everything like that. And they still may be doing that. But, you know, this season was all about taking her down to her, you know, breaking her down to her absolute worst and try to build her up from there. But we've got this other character who's now Canary, you know, that's a very strong character. And I think we're, you know, having to build her up because at this point, the Laurel character is kind of that. She's just kind of expendable. I don't see her. She's not adding anything to the overall arc that we're seeing with Oliver, other than kind of being a foil to him in potentially having any other kind of close relationships with women.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and you could kind of say the same thing for Thea, too, at this point.
A little bit, but I feel, and I want to talk about Thea down here because you had some notes about a theme that kind of is running through this episode, and I wanted to bring up Thea when we talk about Roy. So remind me about that. But I feel like Thea's got a little bit more to do. I mean, who else is going to manage the club, you know, for one thing?
Well, yeah. So. I mean, well, you're going to have, you know, background characters doing necessary everyday things. You have to. So I don't mind that these sort of side characters aren't doing much right now.
Right.
Because it to me, it's okay. It moves the story along okay, so and keeps them in there so you can use them something later on. I mean, the reason I bring that up is because I hear a lot of complaints about, well, what's Laurel been doing and what's Thea? I mean, she's just kind of wasted. Yeah, I see that stuff online. But I don't really think that is a waste. That's part of their life, and it's also part of Oliver's motivation to do things, you know?
Yeah,
so
I mean,
you have to have those characters.
But and the secondary characters, I mean, just by the nature of the fact that they're secondary characters, they have to mark time until they can have their story. But you need to have them on there so that, you know, people don't... It's like, wow, I haven't seen this character in, you know, like... Well, like Brother Blood. I haven't seen this character in, like, 7 episodes now. Like, what's he doing? I mean, and that's... That is him not being there is almost as important as him being there because you don't know really what's coming. But if, like, Laurel didn't show up for 7 episodes and then just came back and be like, unless she
exactly.
said, oh, hey, I was just, you know, in Switzerland or something like that, you know, it's where was she?
So Switzerland. I just taking down Swiss mafia.
So, anyway, I think that, like I said, I think this was a really good turning point for Laurel, and it was, you know, a very female-centric episode, but there was still a lot of other good stuff going on in this. And obviously, Thea was having to learn some hard lessons herself this episode. And what's great is I think even at the end, she was a little broken, but she was still holding strong. She knows... stuff is happening. She just doesn't know what and is, you know, grumpy that, you know, people, you know, don't tell her more. But I really like what they've done with Thea's character over the season. She is so much more responsible. I really have grown to like her. She is
she's
well-spoken. She's responsible. I mean, I see her running the club and you know, in the scenes that we see her in, just taking care of all this stuff that it's like, wow, I mean...
Well, and, you know, she's not an idiot. She knew Roy wasn't really screwing around on her. She knew exactly what he was doing.
Right.
He was doing it to push her away because
she's
she
not an idiot, except when it comes to talking to her brother.
Well...
Doesn't it seem like mom's holding it back something? I don't know. And you don't lie to me. Yeah. Okay. You're so pretty.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. I can see what you're saying, but
yeah, I mean,
I don't know if she's that stupid. Now, whereas, you know,
I know what you mean.
lands. I'll talk about him in a minute.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree with you. I like where she's going to. So
you had this. So we've kind of discussed like the different birds of prey, like these strong female characters and stuff that we've seen here, and Felicity should be kind of another one of the birds of prey, though she didn't have a lot to do. But you know,
although she did a very good job of making her presence known in this episode. So.
Yes, yes. I always applaud her. It's just great, and no jammies though.
No jammies this time. No, she's they're in the wash.
I'm hoping we see her in jammies one more time before the season's
yes,
out. That'd be
absolutely.
Cool. But I think you had an interesting take on kind of another kind of overall theme for this. So why don't you tell us about that?
So I just think the theme was something that we kind of see here and there throughout the series about becoming a hero, and in this particular one there was that threat of look, you got to be careful, don't kill these people. That automatically removes your hero credentials.
Yeah.
As where it comes to Helena, you know, start with her. You know, Oliver didn't want her to kill. That would make her crimes even worse, although she's done quite a bit of killing.
It's not even that. I think he was also concerned with the phrase that came out of this episode, which I believe was spoken by Helena, is that, you know, once you let that darkness in, you know, it stays with, like, once you start tainting yourself, you can never be untainted, right? It's like you can't be a little bit pregnant. You can't, you know, not be a virgin again. Like, once you have lost, once you've been deflowered, you are always deflowered. And that's, he just didn't want to see her continuing down a path that he can't see any good end for.
Right. And not only that, but it's her father. So actually achieving that goal of killing her father would definitely send her down that path. And I think, you know, despite the ending of it and the results and everything, she didn't kill him. And I agree with you. Maybe she wouldn't have. I'm having a little doubt on my previous thought that she would have. Yeah. I think she had intended to, but by the end, after talking to everybody, I think you're right. So there was that. You know, he didn't want her to kill Frank. Then, of course, Sarah, you know, he didn't want Sarah to kill Helena. He's telling her to restrain herself, and she was frustrated at him because he was restraining himself when it came to Sarah. So, I mean, to Helena. Let me back up. Sarah was frustrated with Oliver for restraining himself about Helena.
Right.
You know, he had no intention of killing.
And her. Helena had that great line where it's like, boy, Oliver really does like to dress up his girlfriends. It's like, yeah, I mean, there's...
He does.
You know, I mean, you got to think about, you know, kind of the psychosexual thing going on here with him. And
yes, I do. I need to think about that a lot.
Okay.
And I will continue we're done talking here.
Yeah, wait a few more minutes. Thanks.
and then, you know, Sarah was trying to convince Slade not to kill Oliver back on the island of, you know, don't kill him, please don't. And she had those similar doubts about killing, what was his name? I'm forgetting the guy.
Hendrick.
Yeah, Hendrick. Right. So she, you know, she didn't want to kill him.
But that's the thing. It's like at that point, you know, we're going back to what I was talking about earlier with Sarah. It's like she does what she has to do. It's like, all right, I don't want Oliver killed, but I probably will be sending this guy to his death. But like there's no ties to him. So it's very easy to do something like that. Right. It's that darkness that slips in. It's very easy to make this choice where, Josh, I'm going to save you from dying because I know all about you, but there's someone that I don't know that's going to have to take your place and they're going to die. Well, it's a very easy choice for me to make to say, oh, I can't let Josh die. But this other person, I don't know anything about them. So I'm going to let them, you know, I'm going to let them take the hit.
Right.
Which is kind of what she's doing here.
Yeah. And he's definitely not an innocent person.
Oh no.
But in this case, you know, in this particular case, he hasn't done anything to warrant being killed by Slade like this, or you know. So that right. was and that seems like that was kind of intended to be an event that put her on this path to being such a ruthless killer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the writers did it in such a way that they made it a little bit easier for her and possibly for the audience to accept, because he then, it's not like he's just there and he's like, please don't send me in. And, you know, boom, he gets a weapon and he turns on her. It's like, all right. He turns on Nikolai or Anatoly. Yeah. Anatoly. You know, so wham, she brains him with a rebar or whatever it was. So, you know, it's not like he's just sitting there, please, you know, please don't do this. I'm not hurting anybody, you know, right? They could have gone that way and really made it a harder choice for her. But, you know, they made him antagonize someone that she also saw as a friend and, you know, made that decision for her easier. The writers did. So, you know, damn it, writers, you know, they're making their characters worse off than they need to be or whatever. So,
yeah. Well, and then, you know, of course, Oliver doesn't want Roy to kill anybody.
Right.
And especially even as an accident, but working with the team, too. So,
well, dude, so he just had a bullet put through his hand. You know, which,
by the way, bad way to grab a gun.
Yeah. I mean, like, at least come up underneath it. But that was pretty, I mean, it is a primetime show, but I was a little bit graphic. I was really kind of shocked when I saw that. It also made me wince quite a bit. It's because I'm sure that would just hurt so much.
That special effect was 1/5 of the budget for this week.
That looked like a practical effect, actually. I think they probably could have done that a little bit cheaper. But yeah, then he's, you know, making his fist, he's shaking, he's ready to, boom, you know, he's going to explode, you know, roar, smash. And then Oliver's like, okay, so he calls him Speedy, which I was like, why is he calling him Speedy? That, like, has never been established. And then, of course, it's revealed that he's like, you know, oh, you didn't react until I reminded you of Thea. And I'm like, oh, right. Thea's name is Speedy. And then he's like, please don't call me Speedy. You know, I thought that was a great little banter right there, because
great how they did that.
Right. Are they going to call him Speedy in the show? Because he doesn't seem like the Speedy kind of character, right? He's a little too streetwise to be the Speedy that I think comic fans expect. So
yeah.
I think they probably are going to go down a Red Arrow / Arsenal.
Well, I saw a little thing online with some of the producers. I don't know if it was Guggenheim or not.
Probably was Guggenheim. He's the one that seems to talk the most online.
Yeah, so. where I think for a while that Speedy thing is going to be kind of a running gag.
Oh, okay.
And they're working towards Arsenal was what I saw online. Don't know if it's true or not,
yeah.
But I do like that idea of them using Speedy because it irritates him. So
yeah, I mean, it's a little thing, and it is if it's a trigger point for Roy, for Oliver to call him Speedy, it's a great way to get his attention. Right, he's lost. Like Roy kind of gets lost in that. It's almost like a blood rage kind of thing. I mean, and mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of like the Hulk. I mean, that's kind of what I was insinuating there with the Roy smash thing. You know, and if Oliver can say, call him Speedy and get him to snap out of it or focus his attention back on Oliver, you know, then that can control the situation a little bit better. But what I wanted to bring up also about the Hulk and Roy kind of as a, you know, parallel here, I guess, is that so Oliver is like, all right, you can't see Thea anymore because, you know, you just can't control yourself and I'm afraid you're going to hurt somebody. Yet, who's the one person that seemingly can calm Roy down? And, you know, like, because we just saw him profess his love for Thea and get her this really nice bracelet.
I thought that was going to be tracking her.
Now, I did, too. I thought it was going to be, like, would have a security device in it because of everything they talked about last week.
Yeah, me too.
I did. I
turns out it was just a nice bracelet.
Yeah, it was just a nice, big, thick bracelet. But they get to this, you know, point where it's like, it's kind of like the same thing that happens in the Hulk comics where Betty Ross is Bruce Banner's girlfriend, and yet when he Hulks out, first thing they want to do is get Betty as far away from possible, as far away from him as possible. But what does the Hulk want to go after is Betty, because, you know, she's the one that kind of can soothe him. It's bad logic, and it's something that the characters in the show just don't realize, and it's going to bite him in the butt. And I hope that I honestly hope that Roy doesn't actually kill somebody, because I really don't want to see his character go to that place. I think they need to keep him a little more innocent. You know, I mean, you've got Sarah, Oliver, Diggle. You know, they've all had to kill, and, you know, it does not make them, you know, they're not happy about that, and I right. would hope that they can protect him, but taking Theo away, you know, making him push himself away from Thea, and which he seems to think is an okay thing as well. And like you said earlier, you know, Thea realizes that, you know, he's doing it on purpose, but what is that purpose? So,
yeah.
Well, that's a lot of not killing.
Yeah, there's a lot of not killings. Yeah. You've also mentioned it several times about the heroes. You know, what makes a hero and stuff for this episode. Oliver makes a statement that he created the Huntress, and then at the same time, Sarah also reminds him that he made Slade too. So my question for you is, do you think the heroes are always responsible for creating their own enemies?
It certainly seems that way in comics. Mm-hmm. That's very common to see. So
Oliver created Vertigo too, Count Vertigo.
Yep. I think it does, especially if you're going to be a hero that doesn't kill people. If you're going to be locking them up in prison or an asylum or something, you always run the risk of them getting out and causing more havoc. And on top of that, carrying all that anger and vengeance towards you mm-hmm. in the process, making them more dangerous. I think that's probably very common in at least in a comic book universe.
Well, I mean, definitely with the Batman villains, that's, you know, he's created probably 70% of those people.
Yeah, but if you think about it, even in the real world with you know, police officers and lawyers and people like that, whenever they put somebody away, matter of fact, we just had a case here last year in Denver where that had happened. Somebody came – they broke out of jail and they went and killed the guy that had put him there.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess that is probably – something you have to worry about if you're going to be somebody that's does this.
Yeah, I mean, but that's exacting revenge on someone that's put you away. But I mean, even with the Huntress and Slade, I mean, they were relatively normal people to a degree. Now the Huntress, I would say her father was probably more responsible for making her. But, you know, Oliver tried to take her and rechannel her, and he taught her just enough to be dangerous, right? And then mm-hmm. she stopped her training too soon, not ready to go.
Same with Slade. I mean, you could say that the Mirakuru is really what made him, but Oliver's actions pushed it over the edge.
And that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think there's different elements for that. So it's God, being a hero is tough, man.
It is. It's a conundrum of being a hero, especially if you're going to be one that doesn't, you know, put the arrow through the eye. At least, maybe the eye is not the best example.
Yeah. Oh, just seeing some stuff from this episode where the hand of Roy's hand heals, uh-huh. I'm thinking Oliver probably didn't just shoot an arrow into Slade's eye, like I was speculating the other week that Oliver actually has to remove the eyeball in some fashion, because otherwise I think it would have just grown back.
Oh, that's a good thought, maybe.
So I hadn't.
So he actually pulled the arrow out too, huh?
Yeah. I mean,
he put it in and took it out. There's a double whammy.
So.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, I guess if you're gonna decide to go into the hero business, be ready for creating more enemies.
Yeah.
So.
And then there was the. I actually gasped in this episode, and it wasn't when like, you know, Laurel did something or, you know, there was a bad guy around. It was when Quentin was calling the Arrow on the Arrow phone. I actually gasped at that scene. I was like, oh no, because Oliver's right there and his phone starts ringing. I'm like, oh crap, is this going to be it?
Jeez.
It was not it.
It should have been. Come on, Quentin.
Don't you think he's got to know?
Yes, he's got to.
I think there was another scene in an alleyway. Oliver's standing there, kind of turned away, and he's talking to Sarah. But
Come on, jeez. He should know. I mean, the one thing that said, that tells me he doesn't know is when he turns around. You know, he's calling on the aerophone, and he turns around. And he kind of has that look, and he's like, "Was that? I don't know." But and on, you know, to go along with that, Oliver, how about putting the aerophone on vibrate?
Yeah,
you know, if. Especially if you're going to be hanging out with the one guy that has the number. but at least he had the foresight enough to, you know, put his mom's picture.
Now, how interesting is that? He hates his mom, but he's using her as the cover, you know, for when Lance calls him.
I'm guessing Felicity did that.
You think so?
She would have thought ahead. To that, you know, I don't think he would.
I think Oliver's doing it because, go with me on this, and this may just be crazy talk on my, maybe I'm getting a little Huntress in me, so he hates his mom, really. He has no parental role models anymore. Lance is probably the closest thing to like a father figure he's got now, because I mean, he's someone that he respects. And, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's an interesting, you know, kind of Freudian sort of thing, I think. You know, he's taken his parental role and he's assigned it to this police officer that he's using. I don't know.
I just thought of a storyline. So, Mr. Guggenheim, if you're listening, this is – so we need a storyline for when they finally reveal that Quentin knows about the arrow. So here's the scene, okay? So Lance calls the arrow phone thinking he's going to talk to Arrow. Oliver has the phone but forgets that his mom's picture is a replacement for when Lance calls him, and he answers it like, "Hi, Mom." You think? Yeah?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go, right there.
"Hi, Mom, how you doing?"
Oh, yeah.
Because it'd have the voice modulator on it. And I thought Felicity's reaction was great. And she's like, "Oh, yeah, Lance is calling you." "Oh, Lance is calling you." You know, just like, "Oh, no, that's right." She kind of put two and two together there and reminded herself about it. So,
yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you a quick question about the opening. And maybe this has happened all season long, but I haven't noticed. Did you notice that the intro sequence is different?
I think they changed the dialogue a little bit, or they definitely changed the images.
Scenes, yeah. The images that you saw were different. They still matched. I think the dialogue was the same, but the images still matched what he was saying, you know, in order to become something else or the hero that I was, whatever. And they changed them to scenes that have happened recently. Both on the island and with like Roy when he was training Roy. So that's the first time I had noticed that. So I guess I could go back and look at some of the other episodes.
You know, I pay just enough attention to that to like, I hear it every week, but it's one of those things. It's like, I'm so excited about getting the episode, but it's important for us to remember, you know, that's why they run it every week, that, you know, he is trying to be better than the person he was to honor the memory of his dead friend. You know, he's not going to kill anymore and stuff like that. So I should pay more attention to those. But yes, they definitely did change the at least the video this week. So
I think it stood out because I don't think Roy has been in it before, and he was this time. That's why I noticed. But anyway, and then just one last thing, I just want to point out Felicity.
Yes,
it's completely awesome.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
That's it. Okay.
Great lines in this show. Great lines.
I'm serious. If they just did a spinoff with her, you know. I'd love to see her show up in a comic book. There are characters, I think, that fulfill that kind of role in different comics that I read and stuff like that, you know, that have that similar kind of voice as a secondary character, as a assistant or helper character of some kind. But, she's so much fun to watch. Very excited. They all have so much fun doing the show, and it just kind of shines through, I think.
More Diggle. They went back to Diggle being a background character. Come on, get him interacting a little bit.
As I was pointing out to one of my coworkers, Diggle's great. He nods very menacingly to promote violence against returning psychos. He also comforts, right? Hand on Roy's shoulder. There, it's okay. you know, to console Roy. He was very instrumental in, you know, two scenes at least this week. Anyway, okay. I want to get to a couple of the references here. So we got street names again, referencing writers and artists on the show. So there was the corner of Gail Street and Simone. Gail Simone was a comic book writer. Most notably, she wrote, some of the first arcs of Birds of Prey. And then Michael Staten was referenced again. That's Helena's dead fiancé, who is named after artist Joe Staten. And then mentioned Roy being presumably called Speedy, but not actually being called that. We've got Hugo Mannheim, who was the gangster they were looking for at the beginning of the episode. And in some of the Superman Batman comics, there's a character called Bruno Mannheim, who is the son of Intergang's boss, Moxie Mannheim. And he's got connections to weapons in Kandak, which, again, was a reference from last week's Suicide Squad episode. And he's also been in Young Justice and Smallville. And then was it Diggle that was talking about the non-lethal arrows here? Because I remember that Sarah made a joke about the...
She talked about his baby arrows.
Baby arrows, yes.
But Diggle says non-lethal arrows, huh? It's not like you to be playing with kid gloves. Kid gloves. That seems like the boxing glove arrow. I think we just got our boxing glove arrow. That was probably all we'll get.
That's it. I'm still holding out hope that there'll be something where, like, you know, because they're working out, right? They've got, you know, like, I'm sure their boxing gloves are around for sparring.
Yeah.
And at some point, Oliver, you know, maybe he'll be doing something. He'll be walking back, and he'll just, like, pick one of those up, and then he'll look over at his arrows and look back at the glove and then go, nah, and put it down or something. I'd like to see something like that.
Yeah, I would, too.
Because especially if he's getting into these non-lethal arrows. And we saw more. We saw the bolo arrow again. I think there was an explosive. Was there an explosive arrow in this one? It might have been. So, you know, we're getting to see some of those other ones. I missed this, but you had put down here that Slade mentions a Roman story.
When he's tattooing Oliver and he says, in Roman days, they would tattoo criminals to remind them of the crimes that they've done. So I just thought that was a cool kind of a nod to his time on Spartacus. Being on Spartacus.
Yeah.
So, don't know if that's what it was, but it makes sense. And I thought of it right when he said it.
Right. Whether they intend for those kind of things to mean that or not, I mean, once they film it, it kind of takes on a life of its own, because if that's the way that, you know, the viewer interprets it, that's a totally a valid point of view for it, whether they intended it for, you know, to be seen that way or not. So,
yeah.
And then
it's not like he said, Nissa al Ghul. Oh, yeah. I remember her back in Roman times, too. Ooh.
Yeah. And then we also had D.A., Kate Spencer, return. And she was in the comic books, Kate Spencer becomes the Manhunter, I think like Manhunter 4 or something like that. But Kate Spencer as Manhunter was also a member of Birds of Prey at one point in the run on the comic.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I found that out when I was doing some research, so... Interesting.
Well, there you go. We can throw her up here on that Birds of Prey list.
Right. And Laurel going all dark by blackmailing the DA. I mean, okay, really? You've been in a lot darker places this season, and that's what you choose to use the quote to interpret that you're you're blackmailing somebody, so you're going dark? Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was interesting, so.
You know what? This episode, it let the dork inside me, so it was kind of good. I was very excited about this episode. I liked it a lot, and once I got that dork inside, it just never comes out. That's just how I am. I like comics too much.
I'm going to send you a definition from Urban Dictionary about what the word dork actually means, my friend.
All right.
Maybe you'll reconsider your
words.
I'll
check that out.
Okay. So anyway, that's about all that we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Oh, yeah, and if you like this episode, give us some of that feedback on iTunes. Love seeing that. And you can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or on Twitter at greenjusticepod. And you can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And you can also be sure to check out our other show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which I do here with Josh. It's also available at randomchatter.com. And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.